large sliding doors in the aft and huge windshields. Ryan frowned. Delivery vans. Can't imagine a worse wag for fighting.
Hopefully there won't be any.
Stephen hitched up his belt. Christy shot the man a look.
Ever done the journey without a fight?
Well, there's always a first time.
Psh, idiot.
Footsteps crunching on the frozen ground announced the arrival of some people at the barn door.
Just a tick, folks. We'll be rolling soon.
Okay, Mr. Stephen.
Standing close to the young man who spoke was a young woman, no more than a girl, suckling a newborn baby under her blouse. There was a pile of patched duffel bags at their rag-wrapped boots. Leaning against the barn door was a gruff pair of men dressed in clothes made entirely of animal furs, including their boots and hats. Large, unsheathed knives were stuck in their belts, and each was smoking a homemade cig and held a muzzle-loading rifle as if it were part of them.
Hunters.
Passengers. The big guys are Clem and Bob. The others are the Johnson family, Hector and Sarah. Kid isn't old enough for a name yet.
Only 5, sir? I mean, 4 and a half.
Jack sniggered.
Hey, not many want to go anywhere near Front Royal these days. In the winter, I mean.
Of course.
And this is the convoy?
J.B. completed his circuit around the assortment of rickety vehicles.
2 trucks and 2 vans, all civilian wags.
More than enough. I have done this run 100 times, and I always get through.
Passengers, too?
Ryan lifted a hood to check the engine.
Accidents happen. What are you looking for?
Engine seems okay.
Ryan lowered the hood of the first truck.
Told you so. I take good care of my wags.
Well, we're not going to take your word on it.
J.B. went to the second truck and lifted the hood. The latch was stuck and required some pounding to get free.
We are passengers and we'll check the air in the tires if we think it necessary.
Stephen glanced at the barn at Monty, standing on the street corner.
But we're losing daylight.
Ill-prepared is doomed from the start.
Doc slid open the door on one of the vans. He climbed into the seat and started the engine. It rattled and knocked for a while, then steadied to a smooth hum.
This one is okay,
he shouted out the window. Dean slid into view from underneath the truck.
Spring's okay. There's some body rust, but the thing is repaired with wood.
Engine seem okay?
Holding up the hood of the second truck with his hand, J.B. scowled at the greasy V6.
Yeah, I guess. No obvious problems. But I'll wrap some of the heater hoses with duct tape as a precaution.
Tires seem in good shape.
Ryan inspected the rubber for critical defects. A blowout in one of the mountain passes could tumble them into a ravine and chill them all faster than a Mutey attack.
They got me here.
Any spares?
2 each, tied to the undercarriage.
Blasters?
What you folks brought, and there's a brace of shotguns and a case of Molotovs.
Homemade firebombs and 2 scatterguns? That's it?
Why would I need mercies if I had missiles and an electric minigun?
Ryan accepted that. Dean crawled over the trucks in a fast inspection. The first wag had the spare tires. The second truck carried all of the spare fuel. Big 20-gallon military fuel cans were tied to the aft railing of the truck, which only made sense. They could always drop the cans as a bribe to stop folks chasing after the convoy. Or they could release the cans with a lit fuse to block the road with a wall of flame. Of the 2 tactics, he much preferred the latter. The best defense was making the other fellow dead, as his father always said. Dean jumped to the ground.
Plenty of juice.
Enough to get us there?
Easy.
Where did you get the gas?
J.B. curiously unscrewed a cap and took a whiff. It wasn't the condensed fuel they found in the redoubts, or regular gas, but something else. Not kerosene, either. Probably a mixture of gas, kerosene, alcohol, and anything else that would run an engine. The armorer hoped the man was smart enough to add some bullet shavings and a drop or 2 of used oil to the fuel to help maintain the engines internally.
Where I find fuel is my biz.
J.B. accepted the rebuff.
Fair enough.
What's in here?
Mildred rattled the door of the second van.
It's locked.
That's just some cargo for the Baron.
Blasters?
Wheat.
Mildred tossed her medical satchel into the first van.
In the middle of autumn?
Wheat!
He walked toward the people waiting at the doorway. The companions exchanged brief looks, but said nothing aloud.
Okay, folks! We're leaving now! Get your stuff on board!
In an orderly fashion, the passengers climbed into the back of the first van and took seats amid the packs and bags.
We're doing a standard sandwich pattern.
Ryan spoke to the other companions as they gathered around him.
Truck, passenger van, cargo van, and truck. I'll take the lead so Stephen can show me the way. JB, you ride in the back as gunner.
Of course.
The armorer unfolded the wire stock of his Uzi submachine gun.
Christy, take the passenger van. Doc, ride the cargo. Jack, you drive the second truck, with Mildred riding shotgun in the cab. Dean in the back.
There was no dissension at the order, so everybody moved to their assigned posts. Climbing into the cab of the lead truck, Ryan adjusted the mirrors to suit him, then worked the choke a few times. The big V6 engine caught the first time, black smoke tinged with blue pouring from the rusty tailpipes. The whole wag shook as the engine loudly backfired, then settled into a steady hum. Christy had some minor trouble starting the passenger van, but after a few tries it finally caught. Doc was surprised at how smoothly the engine ran for the cargo van. Smooth as silk. The cab was remarkably clean, and on a wild hunch he tried the air conditioner. The engine automatically revved to handle the compressor, and icy cold air blew onto the surprised man. Doc turned it off immediately.
Impossible.
JB had once told him that the ammonia gas in the units easily leaked through the rubber seals, and no AC would work after only the passage of a decade. 100-year-old air conditioner that functioned perfectly? The scholar made a mental note to tell the others about that as soon as possible. Then, feeling very apprehensive, Doc looked through the tiny ventilation grille in the wall dividing the cab from the aft cargo area and stared at the array of different-shaped boxes lashed to the metal floor. Wheat be damned. What was he really carrying? Applying the gas and shifting gears on the stick, Jack revved the big engine on the second truck a few times before trying the ignition. The pre-dark wag jerked as the clutch was engaged, and the engine hesitantly roared into life.
Sounds odd.
Mildred set her sore foot on top of an old dirty blanket to be used as a cushion. She rested the M4000 shotgun in her lap and touched her shirt pocket, which was bulging with extra shells. Jack rolled down the window.
Rotary engine, not piston.
Is that better than diesel?
Nothing better than diesel.
The teenager gunned the engine. Loosening his blaster, Ryan laid his rifle across the dashboard and shifted into gear, slowly testing the brakes.
Pulls to the left.
Ryan fought the steering wheel.
Still works.
Stephen was slightly annoyed. Rolling out the barn door, Ryan headed for the main gate. As the convoy rumbled forward, a crowd of white hairs and children watched them going by without much interest. However, Ryan thought he recognized one of Philippe's crew watching from an alleyway. Then they were gone in the smoke and dust. Monty and the SEC men were at the gate, holding the double doors open wide to let the convoy pass effortlessly through. None of them waved or cheered or even smiled. As the second truck cleared the exit, the SEC men closed one of the doors, and two men took guard positions at the opening. Exactly the same as Ryan had first seen them do the day before.
Head east, toward the quarry.
The stock of a rifle rested on Stephen's lap, the long barrel jutting out the window.
And for God's sake, stay close to the vill.
Trundling away from Rockville, Lyon led the convoy around the town until reaching a packed dirt path that skirted the ragged edge of the deep quarry. The excavation was well over 1,000 yards across, and so deep the bottom wasn't visible to Ryan inside the cab. But reflected light playing on the irregularly cut walls clearly indicated that the bottom was filled with water. The spacing between the vill wall and the pit was uncomfortably tight, barely wider than the truck's, and Ryan scraped the bumper along the wall several times, trying to stay as far from the edge as possible. Thankfully, the vans would have no trouble, being so much smaller in width, but for the trucks it was tight quarters. Loose rocks tumbled into space as the wag slipped in some loose gravel and slid dangerously toward the right.
Careful!
Shut up.
Ryan concentrated on the driving. Splashing through a small creek, the one-eyed man relaxed as the wag finally went past the ville and the path angled away from the quarry toward the woods. Lumbering through a